Hello and welcome to Broadcast Urantia. My name is Jay. Today we're going to pick up where we left off from last week with Michael from Hawaii. Hello, Michael. Are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
That's good. Thanks once again for joining us today. Now, I understand that this journey took place back in 72. You had cried out to God, "Where are you?" Can you take us back there and just tell us a little bit about how it all transpired? I also understand that this happened after you fasted for 40 days. I found that very interesting. Any thoughts on that, Michael?
There's a little bit of a mix-up in the concept of what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to the events that just preceded this wonderful trip that happened in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
Well, prior to that, historically in my life, if you look at it, I was always a believer in God. In fact, God seemed to be very, very important, centric in my life. Now, and that particular period of time, I was challenging some of those who had a very strong belief. And at the time, of course, things were going around like Time Magazine, God is dead, and all of this stuff. So it was very difficult to find those who would support the notion of a real God. To be educated meant that you would have to deny the reality of God, because the concept at the time of what had religion had done was to squelch much of what science could bring forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it remained very, very much a stigma at the time. If you were a believer in God, that means you were kind of stupid. Well, ultimately, they challenged me. And I said, if God is real, why don't you go out in the backyard tonight and just see, challenge God, because God is almighty. And if God is supposedly almighty, he'll come down there and he will answer you. Well, at the time, it was somewhat of a superfluous challenge. But because of the derangement, the fact that I had essentially began to worship God at a very young age, on my own, not through official ministry, but through the guidance, first of all, of the pressures that are given by the Holy Spirit, you might say,
mm-hmm.
as well as just attunement, which brought forth this very deep belief in God. Now, going out into the backyard that night to essentially challenge those who not God, but to those who dared me to do that and see if God was real. I said, well, why not? Because I believe that God has a omnipresent sense. I wasn't fully aware of just how he implanted himself within me, but apparently it was well attuned enough so that that night, as I did just that, call out to God to make himself real, to bring forth, to show himself, or to send an ambassador, emissary, someone to represent him, of his reality and divinity. This, of course, would kind of represent a concept of an angelic presence. Well, what I had encountered was, in my view of the sky at night, it was, I believe it was a night which did not have a moon.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very dark and clear. And in Hawaii and in Maui at the time where I lived, the lights of the town were not exceptionally bright, so the sky was very clear. And it seems that my eye caught what appeared to be a star out of its place, because generally speaking, I would tend to know the route of Mars it is. And of course, there's an airport nearby, and the landing lights of planes at night would shine, and they weren't too often in those days, nighttime aircraft. However, it wasn't. It took a path that was basically directly toward me. In other words, didn't aim toward the airport. It veered off in that direction. It ended up just getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And I continued this prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, there came a point where I realized that there was consciousness behind there. It was as if when I looked at this beautiful star, growing brighter and brighter, someone was there looking back at me. And it was the feeling you get when, you know, you suddenly look around because you feel that there's someone staring at you, and then you look around and then there is someone staring at you, and then you go, oh, okay, that's the reason I felt that. Well, it's very similar to that, essentially a type of telepathic connection. Well, when that happened, I got locked in there. It did not go away. That feeling of being stared at
mm-hmm.
was continuous, and it began to get stronger and stronger as I continued to the point where of my prayer, basically, you know, asking God, make yourself real, God, or send an emissary, send a representative to bring to me this reality, because I know the heavens are filled with yourself, and as a result. Continue to that point of pressure and type of scariness eventually ended up filling me because it was reacting to me and what I was thinking and what I was praying. And it came a point where it had come to a point where it was very close. It was no longer a star. It was essentially a very, very bright object that seemed to be not flying or not essentially staggering around in space or out in the sky. Instead, it seemed to just be like a bubble that seemed to just drift toward me.
Mm-hmm.
And as I watched it get closer, I looked around and I began to think, I wonder if anybody else is looking at this, because it was, you know, maybe somebody else is noticing it and I didn't notice anything. No one seemed to, you know, the area around the neighborhood, there was no extraordinary activity. So I continued watching it. And then it pretty much was within range of maybe 300 feet of football field away and about the same distance above ground.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, it seemed to stop. And we basically locked consciousness. I realized that there were people behind this. There was someone, some consciousness behind this. And it was kind of scary, but because of the pure white nature of the object, I just admired it so much. It just looked so beautiful. And then it continued its soft motion over my backyard, which till this day still has a mark where some things, it's a very small area, about 3 foot in diameter, that basically backed off and went back into my home, which was still kind of picture window, which I could see through and still see the object floating. Now, again, it wasn't like looking at a saucer. I think it was pure white light. It was essentially a dimensional state, having that light. And as I went down, went into my living room, I could see that my entire backyard was illuminated as if it was like a light, a spotlight or a floodlight that illuminated my backyard. At the time, the light was white.
Mm-hmm.
It then drifted down a little bit more because I had backed off, essentially hid from. It came down a little bit lower than that 100 foot to a height of about maybe halfway there, about 30 to 50 feet above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
At which point I could see the light. And it then changed. And this is the part in which you have a picture of a similar event that someone was able to take a picture of.
Mm-hmm.
And then it turned from white to blue, the light. And then from dropping down straight from the bottom of the craft, or not craft, the light actually, because I really couldn't see a craft or solid metal object or something, a craft. Instead, it was just coming down this bar. And if you notice it on that photograph, it is a bar of light. It has essentially a luminescent design. It's not a beam of light, a bar of luminescent conveyor. I call it the conveyor unit. It dropped down. And so it was in a vertical position at the time. And then it rotated, forming a cross.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the picture you have on your site. At that point, it then rotated again angularly, moving towards me. And then what appeared was a beam. That beam seemed to move and connect between the light and where I was.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I wasn't greeted by anyone. I just simply ended up in that beam of light and began to ride it up toward the object.
Mm-hmm.
And as I rode up in it, I remember distinctly thinking, hey, this is really, really interesting. And it is something quite like what I would expect God to be like, having some very, very different abilities. So technology, I would actually look at it as a technology so far ahead of what I could imagine. Everything for me, technology was the highest level of electronic. But in any case, there was still gravity. I wasn't feeling like I was floating. It seemed to be like riding in a somewhat seated position and moving toward it. I entered in to the space in which, at that point, I was alone in a room. And when I was alone in that room, I just kind of observed it a bit. I wasn't very afraid at the time. Except that I wondered why I had to, move from where I was to that space.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Jay, you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I'm following you. You said that the inside of the craft, did it appear to be larger than it seemed from the outside?
Oh, definitely. And it then it turned kind of blue.
It had transdimensional properties.
Yes, yes. So as I entered it, there was a physical space. I mean, a physical space in which I was within. You know, I remember being seated. And then in walks two people. They're not my immediate. My immediate response or reaction to that was, they're not human, but they're humanoid, but they're not human. And they came forward, not saying a word, and looked at them and said, "How dare you come in saying that you're God? You're not God, you're people." I was angry, you know. And then I remembered, oh, representative, or, you know, send someone to represent you from out from the heavens. Then I realized, oh, okay, this is they're not claiming to be God. They're just here as representatives, so let's find out what's going on. So then they said, okay, and they left. It started to get a little scary because they were, I guess you would say, real physically apparent beings, you know, and not of the typical gray type.
Did they have a uniform on, or were they wearing some kind of material clothing of any kind?
Yes. They were wearing type of blue-gray. Had a symbol on it, which later I was able to observe a little bit closer, but it was mostly their face I was looking at because they were arms and, you know, they had really long hands, but and small body, but relatively large heads and big eyes. And it seemed like I couldn't converse with them right away. You know, I was like just observing them and making my statement. How dare you come as God? Because you're physical beings. I know you're not God. And then, anyway, they left after I said that, pretty much. And then what had happened was the scary stuff started to begin. I was levitated onto like a bed or something like that. On this gurney or something like that, I was in a semi-reclined position. I remained there pretty much for a while, and then in walks four what would appear to be these what we typically call grays, but they were white, and they had a uniform on, but they seemed different, very different. They didn't walk in a manner that was natural, flowing and natural. They walked more like they all were operating together. So I wasn't sure if they were, you know, natural. But anyway, they ended up carrying me over to another spot, kind of like on this gurney thing, and putting me down. And I didn't like the idea because at that point I was immobile somewhere. I couldn't move, I couldn't run around. And going beyond that point, in walks in, after these four guys left, in walks in what appeared to be a human being. It was relatively tall and had a hood. So he was dressed in what looked like a hooded, dark clothing, and I could see his face. It was very human, and he just stood there, and I tried to get his attention, speak to him, realize maybe this guy is not real. He might just be like a dummy or something there, sitting, standing there. Because he just walked in and parked himself, essentially, and stood there, looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, oh, this is some guy I'm going to talk to with. No response. Okay, well, you're pretty dumb. Anyway, he goes on, and he gets up and walks out. And then in comes these two guys again. And at that point, the first person looks pretty nice. It turned out to be the one who Riley Martin calls Nella,
mm-hmm.
on his sailboat. And behind her is Stan, and he has a really red face, tremendously frightening in a sense, because very red. And he had big eyes and a composure that drew my attention. But in any case, I began to tremble a bit, because it was like, these guys are not human at all. And they got me in this immobile position, and I don't know how I got into it. I can't move. And I did not have any, you know, binding on me, something holding me down. So essentially wasn't, you know, I was paralyzed. And that is frightening, just to be paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
Any case, so Michelle Wan came over. She introduced herself. And getting more and more free. And she realized that Tan, Tanjin Wan, is in the back. And he's scaring me because he has this red face. And said to him, you're scaring him. Why don't you leave for a little while? So he did. And when I was there, still trembling, still afraid, and it's probably one of the most terrifying experiences I had at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She looks at me, and I look at her, and into her eyes deeply, and she says, Michael, don't be afraid. And she didn't move her lips, and I heard her voice, and it felt, her voice had sound and feeling, and her voice had almost like a flow of love that came through. When she said, Michael, don't be afraid, it was like she poured in so much love that all the fear, the terror just drained out of me.
Mm-hmm.
Now there is a scripture in the Bible that says perfect love casted out all fear. Fear is torment. Now this is exactly what happened. All the fear just drained out of me. And then without having this, I want to be like this. So this is really, really wonderful. Because there is no emotion of love that I could ever feel or have ever experienced on earth from anyone, whether it be my mother, parents, wife or any friend or anything, none come close, because it was at a much higher level.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I asked her, how did you know my name? I never told you my name. And at that point, she ignited a memory in me and retold that memory, essentially allowing me to remember being in my crib. And then I remembered, oh yeah, I remember this. The visits I used to have in the crib, that meant I was probably 1, 2, 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Of the same four characters, and in back of them having two. And they are the people that I would remember as my uncle and auntie, but different kinds of people.
Mm-hmm.
They're a different kind of people, different kind of uncle and auntie. And I said, oh, you've known me since essentially birth. But as fact, they wanted me to be named that. They actually told my mother what to name me.
Mm-hmm.
So this all was brought forth in that transaction, that communique right there. Which was like a conversation, but at a higher level, because I began to look at her face, and I said, and I, between her eyes, just a between her eyes, just below her forehead, well, I guess you might see around there, a little bit above her nose, was an indent in her face, and I thought, wow, this must be where all of this comes from, this dent in your head. And she looked at me and she said, no, that's not how it worked. And I said, oh, okay, well, I'm happy that I can, you know, we can convert. From that point, I was not in fear. Suddenly, I could move again, and I just got up, sat up on the gurney, I guess a type of gurney, or lounge chair, or whatever you want to call it, and stood up. And at that point, she said, what do you want to know? And I said, are you from God? And they said, didn't answer. She didn't answer. She just looked at me. And, you know, I was at, I said, you're people. And I worship God, but I worship people, you know. And that was something that was happy. Other interactions with humans, they were looked upon as God or gods. But in any case, I looked at them because of the transaction of love that had happened. I now looked at them all as people, and was ready to be given even more insight. Then I got the invite around there. An invite which was very, very ordinary. And that invite simply stated, Michael, do you want to come with us and see how things work with us? And I looked at her and said, work with you. And at the time I was studying engineering too, but it seemed I wasn't very good at math. I was having a little bit tough time with it. And I said, I'm not good at math. You don't need to be good at math. Kind of, you know, you don't need to know. Well, maybe a little bit, you know. Then they said, but if you come with us, she'll show you what's happening with us. And I said, sure, as long as you bring me back, because I don't want to just, you know, go out there and not come back, because I wouldn't want to worry anyone. And he says, oh, no, we'll bring you back. So I said, sure, I want to go. And I didn't know. I thought I was going to go there to learn how things worked. In other words, immediately what I thought about was how did I ride up this beam of light? All these things, you know, that are so advanced work. And I did remain in that mode for a long time. But they were wanting to show me the higher, the real importance of how things worked with them.